With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, it's Lainey.
Hey, it's Duana.
And welcome to Show Your Work. We're back. Are you ready for this jelly?
Oh my God. It's the fact that you like round out every consonant, I think, that really...
All right. Before we get to the jelly, we are back after a break.
Yeah. I had a bit of a family emergency. Someone had a health issue. They're doing really well. So we had to take a bit of an unscheduled break. You guys are basically family at this point, so you know that. But, you know, I guess in the silver lining package, I mean, I'm not saying I want any of that stuff to have happened, but we do get to come back to this particular podcast, which I think it's the most excited I've ever seen you on a Monday.
On a Monday night. After a full day of work.
Yeah.
I've been jacked up about this for days. And to your point, not that I want to like have had any of that happen in your family, but if it hadn't have happened, we would have recorded our podcast on Friday, which would have been 24 hours before Beachella. No, sorry. Which would have been 24 hours before Beachella. And we wouldn't be talking... Well, we wouldn't be here doing a deep dive on Beyoncé and the work that goes into being Beyoncé, culminating at the moment in Beachella, because of course we know that Beyoncé sets new peaks for herself all the time.
Well, I don't know, like I can't believe him, but to sort of, I feel like I'm in the Bare Naked Ladies if I have $1 million, like maybe we would. We'd be trying to find a way to justify it a week after the fact, because this is one of those things that I don't even think we debated this. You know, we've had a couple of special editions of Show Your Work, but I don't even think we discussed whether it warranted being the entire show. It just kind of became it.
Yeah. And, you know, we've had some requests for an entire show dedicated to Beyoncé on Twitter. Thank you very much, Tracy. If you're out there, we've read your tweets, and we agree. This should be an all Beyoncé show.
Eva said the same thing. And, you know, not to be that person, but we are way ahead of you guys. But here's what was most confusing to me. So, as I said, you know, there's been some stuff going on. So I've been a little out of the loop. I've been doing some health stuff and some family stuff. And you said to me, oh, I've been waiting to talk about this all day. And I was kind of surprised because I'm out of the loop a little bit. But by that, I mean, you know, I did not watch this at 1:30 in the morning, but a whole, you know, 7 to 8 hours later or whenever it came back up on the feed. But what have you been doing all day? How have you not been talking about this all day?
Well, I wrote about it.
Yeah.
But for some reason, it never came up at work today.
Excuse me?
I know. I know. It just...
No. We're not here to drag your colleagues, some of whom are lovely people and who listen to this podcast, but sorry, what?
Well, again, as you mentioned, 1:30 in the morning, and if you didn't stay up, well, it was actually, 2:15 in the morning. If you didn't stay up, you had to find the feed the next day. Some people I worked with didn't want to be bothered.
I mean, it wasn't hard.
I know. Like I said, I've watched it 3 times.
How did you manage that? Let's get into this a little bit, because it took finding the YouTube feed and then timing back, if you didn't watch it live, back to where it was. Because the YouTube feed from Coachella, the live feed, if they are broadcasting live, has about a 3-hour window.
Yep.
and then they broadcast, they rebroadcast their loop every now and again.
So I watched it back to back. So I watched it live. Then you could rewind it immediately, right? And it's not that hard.
Like, yeah, you're just scrolling back. Yeah.
Exactly. So I watched it two times back to back. Then I went to bed. Then when I woke up, I watched it again because Sunday's Coachella lineup hadn't started yet, given the time difference, right?
Well, and also, I'm just fully calling you out here. And because you you practice sleep like it's a habit on Sundays, like you slept most of the day.
Correct.
Okay. I'm just getting that all in a row here.
But some people in my life or in at work didn't do that. And couldn't. Then by the time they wanted to, they couldn't find the feed to go back up again. And so some people missed it. Lots and lots and lots of people did not, like millions.
No, of course. I mean.
But it just so happens that the people I had contact with today at work, for whatever reason, a lot of them have children and just weren't able to make it happen on a Saturday night, Sunday.
Whatever, priorities.
So yeah, I haven't really talked about it to anybody verbally. All I've done online is read and write about it and watch snippets of it. You know, people have snipped it on Twitter or whatnot. But yeah, I've been dying to look you in the eye and talk to you and at you about this amazing thing.
So maybe we start with sort of the logistics of it, because as we are always fond of talking about, as you are fond of pointing out, when it's Beyoncé, it can be however the hell she wants, right? So I'm not a huge scholar of like Greenwich Mean Time and global time zones, but basically, did she stop the world is my question. She acknowledged in her thank yous, in her goodbyes, that, you know, people had gotten up in the middle of the night to watch it. On the East Coast, people were up for 2 a.m. You know, that might have been sort of 7 a.m. in Britain. That's not that much of a hardship, maybe. Like, basically, did she engineer this time slot on purpose?
I don't know. Like, I'm not a Coachella expert. The Saturday headliner is the headliner of the festival. Like, it's the middle day of the three-day festival over two weekends. So she was the Saturday headliner.
And will be again next week.
Yes. I did go back today to look at the history of Coachella to see who headliners have been before, especially given that she made history as the first Black woman. So I wanted to see who were the other women who've headlined before. There are very few of them. Who are the other acts that have headlined before? I didn't get a sense of what the timing is. So I'm not sure if 11 o'clock local on the West Coast is your standard Saturday night Coachella headlining time.
I bring this up partly because the first time that you and I saw Beyoncé together, which was the Miss Carter tour, was that the first time you saw Beyoncé?
Second.
She, I believe...
Or third, anyway.
I believe that the tickets said Beyoncé 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
The lights went down at 9:01.
Correct.
Like, it was prompt.
Which somebody said to me, because I wrote on Friday on the website that I was stressed out because I was supposed to be traveling in New York and I wanted to get a nap in before turning on the live stream,
I can't with you and your like prescribed sleep, but that's a different story.
Okay, so And so I was anxious about getting to it on time and what my connection speed was going to be if I was caught up in an airport, whatever, because of the weather that we've had. And somebody tweeted at me, you know, lovingly, and tweeted at me and said, "Don't worry, she's always late." And I'm saying this lovingly, I get it, but if you know Beyoncé, that is not her deal. Like, I'm sorry, I have to roll my eyes a little bit. In fact, her deal is that she's on time.
I've never experienced Beyoncé being late.
No.
I think when we went to Formation, she was maybe it started 12 minutes late.
Which is on time.
Which is on time. And that had to do with, like, I could still see people being loaded in. Like, her audience was not yet ready for her.
Yeah.
Which is their error, not hers, you know?
Like, Beyonce's not going to give you the hour late kind of thing.
No, so, this is not Lauryn Hill, yeah, where you know she's going to be 3 hours that's behind.
Right. And that's why people of the world had set their alarms like me. Lots of people were taking naps and were ready to go at 2:05 Eastern, 11:05 Pacific, because there was not a chance that she was going to, that you were going to be sitting there for an hour.
No, not even remotely. And I, you know, even watching on delay, even essentially waiting for it to come up through, the antsiness of watching those people with their like jabber in between, you know, where they're supposed to fill time. I was just like, let's go. Let's like, I did feel anxiousness. And then, I mean, what is most interesting to me is that what this is most like, of course, is it's most like the Lemonade broadcast. Remember when the Lemonade broadcast happened? We had a short amount of notice in terms of access and what we were going to do. I think I watched it on Periscope or something. God bless you, people of Periscope, who streamed it. It was... You knew you were going to have a ride. You didn't know what was going to happen.
Yep.
And that sort of was what it looked like.
Well, to go back to your original question, did she engineer it? Lemonade premiered on a Saturday night, like 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
And people stayed home.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a weekend, starting to get warm, especially in North America. You know, you're ready to come out of hibernation. And I remember the think pieces afterwards were, this is what she did. Nobody went out. Nobody went to the fucking bar. Nobody went out for dinner. Everybody either invited people over to their place, made it a night in. And that was the event. So again, going back to what you're saying, what she engineers and what she creates into a moment, there was Lemonade. And was Coachella that? For sure. I don't know if she had a hand in choosing the time, like 11:05 p.m. Pacific, but I do know that she would have had full confidence that millions and millions of people would have stayed up. In fact, she wrote a note. So she posted hours before Coachella. She was like, "Hey, Beehive, so excited to perform for you tonight. I just want to make sure you're not dehydrated. You get your water in. It's going to be a great show, and I need you to bring the energy." Yes, she was sort of saying it to the people in the desert. For sure, it's been a long day for them. But she was also letting the people who were going to live streaming know. In fact, I feel like she was doing it for the people for the most part. Because the vast majority of the people who watched Beachella were online.
Oh, 100%.
Vast, yes. Yeah.
In I would wager, unprecedented numbers, right? Like, this is going to be on top of everything else, on top of being the first Black woman ever to headline Coachella, and on top of, you know, the, not even arguably, but on top of the best performance of her career, I would wager any money that it's going to be record-breaking YouTube numbers.
I agree with you. And I think, too, that apart from caring about our health, what she was saying in that note was, "I have put together some motherfucking banana shit. If you miss it, too bad for you. But I'm giving you a warning. Like, I'm doing you a favor."
Well, there's that for sure. And but I also, without going too highbrow with it, I also just want to highlight, when I say it's probably the biggest numbers for the Coachella YouTube, for example, I just want to point out that when – here's the overarching conversation that we're having here. Beyonce is as maligned as she is celebrated, right? For every time somebody is like, "Oh my God, the queen," whatever, there are people being like, "Yeah, but – or was it this – and blah, blah." And I just want to present as kind of a thesis for our conversation, without getting too nerdy about it, that part of her brilliance, not all by any means, but part of her brilliance is that constant marriage of being a commercial hit machine and doing things that are fucking new and innovative at the same time. And Beyonce is the person who can be both. And that's part of what makes her the woman we devote an entire podcast to.
So let's get into it. Let's get into this two-hour show that is being called her two-hour show, not ours, that is being called the best of her career and by many, the best of all time. There are people who are saying Coachella will never see a performance like this again. Like, too bad for the person who does it, who headlines Coachella next year, because haha, you suck.
Well, let's be real here. Like, I'm 10% licking my wounds because while Coachella for sure existed 10 years ago when I was younger and cooler, it was not the destination that it is now. There was a lot more niche to it. And Coachella will never see somebody like this again, partly because it didn't used to be designed for this. It used to be a bit strummy la-la guitars and coolness.
Yes, that's a great way of putting it. Strummy la-la guitars and coolness. Yes. And yes and no, but for the most part, like how I before the takeover of like the Paris Hiltons and the Lindsay Lohans would descend on Coachella, it was very strummy la-la guitars and coolness.
It was a bit indie, and like that has faded away in terms of in favor of bigger and bigger acts, as a number of music festivals have sort of been the marriage of art and commerce, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was not like this then. To draw an imperfect parallel, Destiny's Child would not have headlined Coachella a decade or two ago.
No, Destiny's Child would not have headlined Coachella, and yet Beyonce at Coachella shaded Coachella for, even though, you know, she was being given this honor as the first Black woman to headline Coachella in 19 years, there were other candidates. Like, Coachella began in 1999, and there was an album that was released that means a lot to many of you out there, and that means a lot to you and me, Duanna. And
yeah,
you know exactly which album
exactly
I'm talking
do
about.
Yeah,
the year before
do
Coachella began in 1998, and we celebrate the 20th anniversary of this album this August.
Oh my God, yeah.
It is the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Ms. Lauryn Hill was building, like that album was, you know, making its way. And if you want to fucking talk about who should have before Beyonce, and I think even Beyonce would concede, Lauryn Hill should have headlined Coachella a long time ago.
I mean, look, Lauryn Hill is so important to me that she is one of the first pieces I remember writing for Lainey Gossip. We go way back. We go, like, don't make me go how far back I go with Lauryn Hill. It's, spoiler, 1994. Google it. But Lauryn Hill, in fairness, was made to be listened to in your Discman a bit. It was an intimacy. It was not the show that this is. And Coachella was not the show that this is back then. So, you know, those have evolved arm in arm. Like, I both agree with you and see the reasons why that was not the thing at the time, even though, if we go back and say, was that the most important album of that year, of that era? For us, sure. Maybe for her. Maybe for Beyonce, who was just beginning her career at that point.
That probably would have been a seminal album for
Beyonce. Oh, my God. Sure.
But anyway, to go back to Coachella and its history, and has Beyonce changed Coachella forever? I would think that, and many people have been talking about this for the last few days now, I would think that she set a standard at Coachella that may not be met again for a long, long time.
Right. And here's why. Because there will be and are other artists who are as beloved. There will be and are other artists whose music is as important to fans, right? And as even as defining of a year or an era, let's say. But there isn't somebody whose music is as important who is a show person like Beyonce. This is the part that to me comes first. Not most importantly, but first, is that this was a show. The Formation Tour was a production marvel, and wondering how it was going to bring Lemonade to us in person in the stadium was amazing and exciting to see what they'd done with technology and so forth. It is child's play in a way compared to the production that happened on the Coachella stage, on a stage that, again, is not made for this.
Nope.
Like, whoever was on right before her was a person with a guitar.
Yeah, you're right. It was Haim. So, mm-hmm. like, sisters with guitars. And then there's an hour break, and then they build her stage, and then she's ready to go. So,
yeah, and Haim is cute and all, but whatever.
Yeah.
First of all, to load in that stage in an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think something you and I talked about that maybe we didn't talk about in depth is how deeply theater geek and production geek I'm going to get about this whole thing. The moment when you first see the stage, after you have met the majorette at the beginning, after you have met the dancers in the King Tutankhamun costumes, a shout out to the Egyptian heritage, and you find the stage and the reveal of the giant lighting grid moving up to reveal the stands on which the entire band is placed, where they're going to be fucking giving her for the next 2.5 hours. That lighting grid is art as well as function.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, it's lights that are meant to light her,
mm-hmm.
but they're also in that pyramid shape, and they are designed to move, and they have a ballet of their own. And that's in the first 4 seconds.
Yep.
I would say I probably spent the first, I don't know, 13, 14 minutes just taking in the production.
Yeah.
Just taking in the coordination of the band. Marching bands are obviously trained in coordinated movements and in choreographed movements, and, you know, everybody should go and rewatch Drumline. But the syncopated rhythms that Beyoncé is known for, like that she built her career on, that's a whole new deal that no one band member was a little dorky and a little off rhythm, that they all assumed their roles, is massive. And that's only a small part. Like, I almost get a bit overwhelmed trying to catalog all of the moving parts in the moving parts.
Yep. And it's outside.
It's outside in the elements.
Yep.
Audio. Okay, so look. So there's a ranging. The even more than Formation, even more than a concert, this was like a 2.5 hour medley. One song flowed into another mm-hmm. song, flowed into another song. Somebody had to write all of that. Somebody wrote a piece of music that never stops.
Yep.
There's no beginning and end
mm-hmm.
that went on. I'm making gestures like a big accordion music page of notation that keeps folding and folding and flops over on the floor. Somebody had to create that behemoth of a Bible of a set list. She had to come up with it, and then somebody had to write the trombone part
yeah.
for 2.5 hours, the like trumpet part for 2.5 hours, the backup vocals. The amount of
work.
First time we said it in the podcast.
The amount of work, the layers upon layers of work in those transitions, in the arrangements. Yes, to your point, the arrangements come first. She decides how she wants to sing that particular song, how she wants to, like, what interpretation she wants to do from it. And then, yeah, it gets sewn together. And then after it gets sewn together, each instrument has to find its place in that tapestry.
And even before that, you know, you say she decides what she wants to present from that song. You'll notice not one of those songs was on autopilot. Not one of the tunes that you know was sung in the way that you remember it from the album or the music video. It's funny that we were talking about Lauryn Hill, because on one of her most recent tours, Lauryn Hill did a real reimagining of some of the songs from Miss Education of Lauryn Hill. And it was really disconcerting to some people. But if you listen to the orchestrations, to the evolution, you would find the song that you remembered. And Beyoncé's are a lot more familiar, but there's elements of that here. And there's some that I think we'll talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
Musically, it's a behemoth.
Oh, it's a gargantuan task.
And I think before we go forward, I have to bring up, it would not be any podcast if I didn't mention this book, but of all the days I'm going to mention it, the book Becoming Beyoncé, The Untold Story, by J. Randy Taraborelli. It's a bit embarrassing that it's become, I don't want to say it's my Bible. That's overstating it a bit. Do I reread it every 2 to 3 months? I do. And what gets lost, and what I love about the book, and what gets lost when we talk about Beyoncé, who is beautiful, and Beyoncé, who is like a mythic pop culture figure and an icon with her pregnant belly, is that she's a musical genius. And she has been from about the age of 15 or 16, mm-hmm. and specifically in layering sounds, specifically in hearing the difference. There are quotes in the book where, you know, she will lay down 12 identical tracks that she herself sings and then goes, you know what, track 7 is not great. That's, most people can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So she has an incredible musical ear that lends itself to this kind of live performance. Live! It yes. was live! This is not, like, there's not pre-tapes. And my next musical geekdom before I let you say something is that you can tell that she is singing live the vast majority of the time.
Correct.
So that's about where I was, I don't know, 15 minutes in. You, I know you, were just bouncing up and down in your bed.
Well, listen, I've had the luxury of seeing it 3 times. And you do need, I think, you do need to see it multiple times because there's so much shit going on.
Oh, I've watched it twice in the interim, but yeah.
The first time, you don't take your eyes off her.
Right.
Because she's Beyoncé. The second time is when you begin to appreciate everybody else and you look at the moving parts. And the third time, for me anyway, it all comes together. So to your point about the musical genius, she's not the first... To your point about the musical genius, there are people deep within the industry who've worked with her who will say that. She is a musical genius. I wrote that in the post I wrote today about perhaps maybe the most underrated part of her Beyoncé-ness is her musical geniusness. No ID, who produced Jay-Z's album 444, actually said that she consulted on the album, that nothing went to whatever, print? Nothing went out without her seal of approval, that she would come in, she'd be like, nah, or yeah. And he was like, she is genius level at understanding music.
And music, that's not performance, that's not image.
It's music.
That's not like even, but that's not even singing. Like I'm talking about like, nerdy, boring stuff like key signatures and
yes.
syncopated rhythms and things.
That's
Beyoncé
right.
is incredibly underrated for her mm-hmm. raw musical talent.
And what's ironic about this is in doing my homework for the podcast today, I do remember that over the years, one of the criticisms, and I put criticisms in air quotes, if you could see me, I'd be air quoting it. One of the criticisms of Beyoncé is that there are many songs of hers where there will be 11 songwriters listed,
mm-hmm.
13 songwriters listed. And so for the haters out there or the non-believers or the people who just kind of want to undermine her and say she's so overrated and I don't understand why this, not the other, all of her songs, she claims to be the writer, but there are like 12 other people helping her and this, not and the other. Those people actually don't understand how music comes together.
Well, let's have a 5-second remedial class. Beyoncé is mostly known to receive instrumental tracks that are written by other artists, listen to them, select the ones she likes, and then write a melody and lyrics. So that's where you're getting, if 3 dudes compose the instrumental track that you hear, that's 3 names right there. And, you know, then there's subsequent additions. On Bootylicious, for example, there's kind of a call out in part of the song, like move your body up and what? Like that,
yeah.
That what? That was Matthew Knowles who suggested that in the studio. And I think kind of annoyed the girls in Destiny's Child. But it lived, it worked, and Matthew Knowles gets songwriting credit on that because he suggested they say what at the end of every line.
Right.
So it's not that she has so much help. It's that it doesn't always take much to get a songwriting credit on a song.
Well, the thing is, do you know who else has 13, like, co-writers on a song?
Everyone?
Everyone. Uptown Funk.
Right, 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 right. Sure.
13 people, or listen, we'll check this later, but I'm pretty sure that there are 13 credited songwriters on Uptown Funk. But that doesn't make headlines, or that doesn't get the same amount of snarly play that a Beyoncé song with 12 other songwriters gets. And it is in particular, and Beyoncé's not the only one who gets targeted with this. Taylor Swift does too, which is why, you know, she did the thing where she wrote the song and she like gave herself a Swedish name. Because
yeah, but I'm already exhausted of that story. I know what you're talking about. Yes. And I don't want to cut it off from our listeners, but it's the trying so hard to prove something. Like, what are you trying so hard to prove? Like, so what?
Well, and that's the thing. Beyoncé has never played that game. And what I appreciate about that, and I kind of realized it today, or at least really came to appreciate it to its full scope today, is to quote somebody who said this to you, what does it cost her to share credits?
Yeah, it's an excellent point. What does it cost her? What does it cost her? It costs her nothing to say, hey, I found an amazing song. I'm going to put some lyrics on it. Or I found an amazing song. I'm going to sing it. You know, I always think about the Destiny's Child version of Emotions.
Yeah.
Which is not a Destiny's Child song at all, but it's the version that is resonant in my mind.
Yep.
It doesn't take anything away from that performance that it's a cover. No, it costs her nothing because she has so much more to give. And because, okay, we marked the time that we marked the first time on the podcast we talked about work. Now I'm going to mark the first time that we say that Beyoncé is 36 years old.
Yeah. It's worse for me than you.
Is it though?
Yeah.
I just think about the fact that this epic, this opus, a 2.5 hour live spectacular. There are no words to use to describe this. They're not super extra. Is just what she's done for us lately. It's kind of amazing.
So we've established that she's a musical genius.
Yeah, I think that's fair and also under-acknowledged, but yes.
And whether or not you out there want to acknowledge this, it is fact.
Right. But watching this, as you watch the performance flow from the third song to the fifth to the ninth, you go, oh, the volume of the work here.
Yeah.
That was one of the first things that struck me.
And the little Jay-Z, da, 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 right?
Sure.
Just randomly in the middle of a song, but it goes and the big band plays it so well.
Yeah, because they've been rehearsed down to the fucking nine. Nobody was going to fuck this up.
Oh, no.
What was the next thing for you? What was the next big moment, the big revelation?
Well, as I was watching it, I was thinking about all the rumors and the gossip that had come out before the show. So there were reports that she hired like 100 extra dancers 10 days out. There were reports that she had started rehearsing, I don't know, fucking 14-hour days or this and that. And this was about 10 days out, 2 weeks out. And I was watching and I was like, you don't know what you're talking about. Whatever you're reporting that she was rehearsing 2 weeks out or started rehearsing 2 weeks out and hired 100 dancers 2 weeks out, I was like, this doesn't happen in 2 weeks. At minimum, the in-warehouse, in-studio, all that camera work is happening at minimum a month out.
Now, what I do believe is that 2 weeks out, if she hires 100 extra dancers, 2 weeks out, they change the choreography because it's not working and everybody rehearses a new number, or they need twice the dancers and they all have to learn 2.5 hours worth of choreography in a week's time. I buy that. That happens. That's showbiz, right? You add, you change, and the show must go on so people deal with it. I can buy that. But no, it's not like this was slapped together in 2.5 weeks' time. That's preposterous.
Preposterous. So in order to make that happen, where you are renting out a space and you have this many people who you can see, we can see, which means that there's like, I don't know, dozens more people behind the scenes that aren't seen.
Yep.
Then because these people are coming to work, right? 9 to 5 or let's, whatever.
Nine to nine. Mandated dinner break. Yeah.
They're getting paid.
Yep.
And then remember, they're also performing at Coachella, so they have to have somewhere to stay. I mean, we're really drilling down on the nitty-gritty of what the expenses are going to be.
I kept thinking about the pants. The pants. Those rubber-looking pants on the band. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The band who, you know, all – I've never had the pleasure of being in a marching band, but maybe in a future life. But I think one of the real facets of being in a marching band is any weather, any whatever, mm-hmm. right? That said, we're talking about the desert, like 100-degree California, even though it cools off at night. I'm thinking about them dancing for 2.5 hours while playing in those rubber pants mm-hmm. and going, they had to test those early enough to see that nobody was going to pass out.
Yep.
That no tuba players were going to get overheated in their sweats and rubber pants and pass the fuck out on the middle of the bleachers.
Or they had to be so used to it by the time that it became a skin for them.
Yeah, but either way, that means 3 weeks of rehearsals in rubber pants. That's what that means. Either way.
Yep.
Because if you got to change the fucking uniform for all of them,
right?
You need, I don't know, minimum 8 days to turn around 200 pairs of rubber pants. I'm just going to keep saying rubber pants.
To say nothing of the expense of the rubber pants. I'll keep saying rubber pants too.
Please.
So she's bought the costuming. She's testing out the rubber pants. The facilities have to be rented. The hourly wages have to be paid. The accommodations have to be paid.
You have to build all that shit in your warehouse,
by the
way.
You have to build the shit. You have to – the equipment, like you're using state-of-the-art, the best fucking cameras out there, right? Cranes, like whatever jib, whatever, all that mechanical tech. I don't think she made any fucking money from this.
Oh, who cares?
No, no. And that's the point. Like, you know, she's not there to profit.
No.
She's actually, Parkwood probably paid out of pocket over and above. I'm actually thinking that she lost. Again, I'm using air quotes, lost money on this.
All right, let's check, because I know you like your homework checked when you do your homework. Let's say Beyonce gets what? 30%? I don't know what the take is on something like that.
Last year, before she canceled, the rumor was that she was getting paid $1 million.
All right, great. So let's say $1 million is not a drop in the bucket for that performance. This is you and
See?
I getting to be a bit TV nerdy.
Yeah.
But it doesn't begin to cover the money we saw on the screen, let alone the salaries for the 500, 600 person production team, including all the performers and dancers and whatever.
You're telling me. Yes.
I'm telling you.
Yes. I exactly.
Yes. We're here. We're agreed. So yeah, she did this not for the money, which is fine because Beyonce didn't need money.
No.
But here we are.
But it's perfect. It is fucking perfect. Actually, I want to thank a reader called Margaret who sent us this Instagram. It's an Instagram from a camera person who worked on the show.
Oh, good.
This is good. You're going to love it.
Except, is it? Because I don't want this person to lose their job.
No, he posted it on Instagram.
It's safe?
He's safe.
Allowed?
Okay. It's not even a private account. So I'll post it with the show notes tomorrow. And so this is what he writes. It's a little bit long, but it's delicious. Okay, ready? Your boy has been working with Beyonce for the past 6 weeks straight. That's how he said it, your boy. So your boy has been working with Beyonce for the past 6 weeks straight. So to our point, Duana, about like how this doesn't fucking come together and get slapped together in 2 weeks, literally maybe 5 days total off. 10 hours a day preparing for Coachella. Working with her has been so monumental. She's the illest boss I've ever had. What a powerful woman. This picture is from rehearsals. I'm showing you right now, Duana. So he is behind her,
yep,
on top of the scaffold, right?
She looks like the image of the queen that you've seen. She's in her sweatshirt with her Beyonce Delta Kappa logo, and he's rising behind her like some sort of specter over her shoulder.
Yes.
Doing his work.
And he's holding on to a camera that looks like a steering wheel for a car. So imagine it's a square steering wheel, and the camera's in the middle of that steering wheel. So I mean, I don't know what the technical term is, but in the building I would work in, it's like a mix between a Steadicam, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of a steady, but like the most sophisticated Steadicam.
Yeah, what you're describing without looking at the Instagram over your shoulder sounds like a Steadicam drone hybrid. Yeah, it's like a camera mounted in a trampoline wheel.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. So
if you know the name of this camera, get at us.
Oh, he tells you.
Oh, go on,
okay.
Please.
Okay. This picture is from rehearsals. I'm above her shooting with the FreeFly Systems Movi Pro and the Alexa Mini, sending a wireless video feed to the projectors. Everything you see in the live stream or on the video wall of her going from one stage to the other or down the pyramid is my camera. This shit gets really heavy after running it an entire show. My body is dead, LOL. There's so much I want to express, but I'm too tired to do it. I'll keep posting some shit. Thank you, Beyonce, and the others who've paved the way. I have no words, just hard work as fuck, and everything is possible. Like, first of all, thank you, Ben. That's his name. You're like, you gave us some real porn here again. But he's talking about 6 weeks straight. He got a total of 5 days off during that 6 weeks. He's telling us what equipment he used, which looks like it's the motherfucking best equipment. And he was only one of how many cameras, do you think, Duana?
I would say not. I'm going to be conservative and say not more than 25, because mm-hmm. then they get in our way, right?
Yeah.
Like you need to be, because we never see them.
Yeah.
Like sometimes if you're watching the Grammys or even the Oscars, sometimes you see a camera guy like scooting out of the way when they yeah. cut to a wide shot. That's okay. That's life. That's live production. It happens. You know where it doesn't happen? On Beyonce's fucking show.
Yes. 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 On Beyonce's fucking show, where each shot has actually been timed. So when you see a close-up of her ass, remember that close-up on her ass where she's wearing the jean shorts and she's like...
And they're like slit to the pockets?
Correct.
Yes.
That was, hey, at the 2 minute 32 second mark where I hit the note in Crazy in Love or Formation and I sing whatever, you zoom on my ass. And then 5 seconds later, it's almost like following a playbook.
Well,
whoever
it is
was
like
calling the shots, they were following a playbook that she wanted.
But I'm going to actually like one up you here. That's not just a playbook of her going, maybe do my ass now, maybe whatever. That's storyboarded. Because Beyonce said, I had these two magical beings in my belly that allowed me to dream this up. And because she's Beyonce, she literally thought about it down to the shot. A storyboard, if you don't know, is the drawing that tells everybody what shot you want. We're going to go from the wide to the what you called the breaststroke that I'm trying to do right now, and then cut to the ass shot.
Yeah.
Those are storyboarded. There is a visual story on paper for mm-hmm. everyone to follow.
Yeah.
Is that super normal for a concert?
No.
But who are we talking about here?
Correct.
So at this point, to me watching, again, this is me narrating my experience. At this point, I recognize as tired as what was his name?
Ben.
Ben. As tired as Ben is, Ben is concentrating really hard on his work and he's the best at his job or he wouldn't be there. But you know what Ben's not doing? Worrying about what his face looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Worrying about how sharp his arms are.
Yeah.
Ben is not also trying to keep his boob inside of his costume.
Yeah.
Beyonce is on camera for 2.5 hours of incessant movement, to the point where I think I could dictate by names the time when she is not on stage or dancing her face off.
Yeah.
And there's like three. You know, and there were times when I would note that she gave herself a minute to breathe when she is kind of harassing the pledges, or when she changes, you know, outfits or whatever. But they're few and far between. If you wonder why I'm reading this book by a random unauthorized biographer that I think was secretly authorized, but we'll get to that later. If you want to know why I read this over and over and over, it's because it sets the stage for this performance as far back as that. Matthew Knowles, when he was training Destiny's Child or Girls' Time or any of the other names they had before they were Destiny's Child and then Beyoncé, among the things he would do, he made them jog while singing. Have you ever jogged? It's hard. Have you ever sung for like more than 5 minutes?
Duane, I went for a jog today.
Yeah.
And I cannot do anything but jog.
Yeah, I know. That's why I don't work out with you. You're infuriating. You don't talk.
I can't talk.
Well,
I don't know how she does it.
But I'll tell you how she does it. She's been conditioning her fucking lungs since she was 11 years old. Singing while standing still, if you're doing it properly, and she is, and she was singing live because you can hear her moments and her breaths and things, you know she was singing live, is incredibly taxing. But she has been training for this level of stamina for
her whole life.
Her whole life. Like, to say 20 years would be shaving a good 6 years off it. Let's call it 25 years. She's been training for this. There's a great story about how one time the only time she got to see her boyfriend is when he and his buddy biked after Destiny's Child somewhere up in the woods where Matthew Knowles had them jogging and singing and brought them Gatorades. Like, and that was their date.
Right.
He brought them Gatorades while they performed. She has been training for this, working for this her entire life. And the book is full of all of the anecdotes of the real specifics of the work and the real specifics of how the work adds up to this. I know one of your favorite things to focus on is that Beyoncé watches tape like an athlete. She watches tape back almost immediately. And those are habits that start, they lost Star Search as 10-year-olds and they were sobbing in the hotel room and their management was watching the tape back with them going, look, you missed that dance step. Look at you. You turned around there. Beyoncé, what were you doing? The habits start incredibly early. Are they healthy? I don't know. Is that the way you want a childhood to go? I don't know. But if you want to know, like, what does it take to build a Beyoncé? That's what it takes. That's why I find this book so continually fascinating.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So it's what does it take to build a Beyoncé from the beginning and then what she does with it now that she's in full control, right? So you're talking about how she has this stamina, and this stamina has been something that she has had or has been an ongoing asset that she has over and above other people because she started so early.
Has honed all this time.
Exactly.
Has seen as a requirement and has honed.
And then how does she, though, now, in the greatest performance of her career, knowing that she has this asset, she still has to apply it judiciously. And what I love is your point before we started recording, you took note of the places where she would take and catch a breath.
Right.
And one such spot was during like a moment that everybody else was like freaking out about. And she used that freak out. Well, you explain it as a diversion.
Yeah. When I was spoiled for the fact that Destiny's Child was going to show up, that Kelly and Michelle were going to show up. And, you know, as you pointed out, I think you pointed out on the blog today, like the silhouette of the three of them coming out in that iconic Independent Women, Charlie's Angels style. That's also not Coachella. That's also not Strummy La La Guitar yeah. Cool. Like, that's all Beyonce. It also gives her a second to catch her breath. When they come out during Soldier,
yeah,
you'll notice it's, I think if Michelle sings first and then Kelly sings first and everybody's losing it because they get their moment in the sun and yeah. they get to sing and have their moment. Beyonce's breathing. She is getting it back. She is gasping it back and waiting for what's going to be her grand finale, which was supposed to be her like busting it beside Solange, right? And was. But I think she gave it slightly less than she might have if she didn't think her top was going to fall off.
Yes.
I didn't think it was going to fall off.
Well, I mean, whatever. It's not going to fucking fall off next week. By next week, that shit will be taken care of. But I do want to go back to that point because you're so smart to point that out in the sense of, you know, yes, the two benefits of doing it that way where Kelly and Michelle come out and Kelly's in the middle at points and Michelle's in the middle at points. It's yes, Beyonce is gracious and she's like, hey, I'm going to bring my girls out and they get to stand in the middle too. But while they're standing in the middle, I am taking a mini break. No one else sees this as a break, P.S. Like,
no, she's still on stage and yes. aware of her face at all times, but she is conserving her energy.
Correct.
The other thing I love about that moment, I have to say, which is a totally different conversation, but one that really rings true for you and I, is that immediately before Destiny's Child shows up, which I believe was a surprise for everyone watching, the quotes that were being read as part of the show were talking about how women are pitted against each other, that women are told that they can't, that they have to compete with one another, usually for men. That was the stage that was set. And then she brings out Destiny's Child and goes, see, that's not us. Mm-hmm. See, we still take care of each other after all this time. See, even though I am me, even though I am currently actually in the act of making history, I have time, I can spread the love, I can share it to my people.
And I've decided to do it in a moment in the show where I need a breather. It's,
listen,
layers upon layers of intelligence and strategy and work and Beyonce-ness.
We don't throw around the word genius. Like, it's, I'm not trying to be bold about it, but I think this is warranted.
It's 100% warranted. Share your anecdote that you read in this book too about, speaking of sharing and competition, about when Beyonce wrote Bootylicious and how she decided who would perform it.
Well, it's really interesting. As Beyonce got more control, she was the she would be the writer, but often the record label or her father, depending on who you ask, wanted her as the lead on many of the tracks. As she got kind of older and was a hit machine, she got to do whatever she wanted. And so for Bootylicious, for example, she wrote the entire song, laid down all of the tracks so they knew exactly how the song was going to be. It was basically a completed song. And then stripped herself out of the lead and had Kelly Rowland sing it. And, you know, then had Michelle Williams sing, I think, the bridge and whatever. But she's able to do that because she has laid the foundation for how they're going to sing, what it's going to be. She's not leaving them to flounder. She's using the, like, substantial musical gifts she has to set the stage and then gets to give them the glory. But it was one of those things that they talked about. We all got to sing lead on Survivor on that album, which prior to that had not been as achievable, which is really interesting. That was really important to her.
Yeah, I really love knowing and reassessing these building blocks of her career, because Beachella was 20 years in the making.
Easily.
Right? So you have, Beachella couldn't have happened, for example, which she puts in the show, like part of the show was a retrospective, a presentation of how Beyoncé came to be, which is why Jay was there, which is why Kelly and Michelle were there. It was a nod to her, I hate this, and we're all sick of talking about things in terms of journeys, but it is part of the Beyoncé journey, that 20-year, I mean, we're in 2018, and 1998 was about the time that Destiny's Child
broke through, yeah.
Right? We're about 20 years in, and this has been building for 20 years, and she has had a plan for it all along. Which I don't know that in 2004, for example, we would have been able to recognize it. But now that we look back and now that you're reading this book or you read it over and over again and we're picking up on the all the steps that it takes to become Beyoncé. This book is what called Becoming Beyoncé. All of that factors into what we saw on Saturday night.
Well, it's so interesting that you say that because that's in the book too. There are numerous instances of people saying, oh, she's in it for the long haul, isn't she? Like, you may not have seen it in 2004 that she was going to be there for the long haul, mm-hmm. but that was always her plan, and it was always her parents' plan. And actually, one of the reasons she was able to achieve it is because they built it into their Destiny's Child plan. This yeah. is not somewhere I ever expected to be, but when each of the members of Destiny's Child went and did their solo albums,
yeah.
that was built into the plan. Hey, after the third album, we're going to break them each out into their own solo world so that it doesn't feel like it's Beyoncé moving on and ditching the other two, but, you know, the spreading three ways. So I really like that philosophy. Speaking of, we've talked so much about Beyoncé, and we have yet to get to the philosophy of the show, some of the imagery and the messages that were sent. And these are maybe some of the things that, as you point out, only really begin to sink in on the second viewing, on the third viewing. Which were most important to you?
Well, for me, I take it as an overall confirmation that this was a grand master plan. As I was watching the show, I can't remember if it was the first, second, or third viewing. I said to myself, I made a note and I said, go back and reread Beyoncé GQ 2013, which is pretty much the last real print interview, the last real interview, really, that she's given, that she gave. Since then, as we know, Beyoncé has vaulted herself. She does not speak. She speaks on stage and she speaks through her music, but Beyoncé doesn't talk to the public anymore in that way, or at least she doesn't talk to the media.
She doesn't need to.
So in 2013, she was doing this GQ interview. She was just about to headline the Super Bowl the first time in New Orleans. Remember when the power shut down? She like took it all. And she was just about to launch that, that HBO self-documentary.
Which, Life is But a Dream.
Yes, which she produced and directed and wrote and starred in about herself. So yes, we can talk about like whether or not the realness of that, but I just want to set the stage. And so after that, again, no more talking. And so given what we know now about Beyoncé and what we've seen her go through and what we've seen her give us, I went back and read it today, and I there are two quotes that jump out at me. It's an extensive interview by her standards, but when she talks about the decision to sever her business relationship with her father, which happened 2 years before in 2011, she says, you know, equality is a myth, and for some reason, everyone accepts the fact that women don't make as much money as men do. I don't understand that. Why do we have to take a back seat? I truly believe that women should be financially independent from their men. And let's face it, money gives men the power to run the show. It gives men the power to define value. They define what's sexy, and men define what's feminine. It's ridiculous. This is in 2013. I'm not saying she invented feminism and the equal pay argument. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that that conversation only really got loud in the last couple of years. Loud, I mean.
You're saying she was on trend or ahead of the trend.
Ahead of the trend. The Sony hack would happen when the Jennifer Lawrence news came out about how she wasn't paid on par with Jeremy Renner and Bradley Cooper on American Hustle. That happened over a year later. I'm not saying, everybody calm down. I'm not saying she invented the equal pay argument. I'm just saying that in 2011 to 2013, it wasn't safe for women to be speaking openly like this and women of her stature to be out there so loud about it. She was saying this in a way that I think, I don't know that we have given her enough credit for.
You know what's so interesting is that I'm less inclined to give her credit for talking about feminism in that way and about power in that way and sort of, you know, that moves me less until you remember she's talking about her father.
Mm-hmm.
Her father who, again, read this book, is the reason that her career is where she is. Her father who, for whatever professional conflicts they had, and there have been many, is still commemorated throughout her art. She is a master not only at sort of being decisive about claiming her power in the monetary way, as you outline, but in separating the art and commerce. Again, we've talked about art and commerce the whole way through, the marriage, the removal. She was able to remove him from her commerce, from her business, and still maintain an artistic presence or an artistic relationship of the father figure without worrying about who Matthew Knowles was in her business. That's, a lot of people would just walk away and not touch the subject again. But that's layered and nuanced and interesting to me.
Well, and I just want to set the time again, because do you remember Patricia Arquette going up on the Oscar stage, winning Best Supporting Actress for Boyhood?
Yeah, 2016.
2015.
Yeah.
So, and the reaction, right? Meryl Streep's fist pumping, J-Lo sitting beside her fist pumping, and everyone is talking about it the next day. Patricia Arquette, yes, she's bringing it to the forefront. That was 2 years later.
Yeah.
So,
and even then, to your point, it wouldn't gain real steam.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't gain real steam until things got ugly. Let's be real.
Yeah. But she was using this language.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
She was using a language that has seemed almost, I don't want to say pedestrian, because it shouldn't be pedestrian. It's still urgent. It's obviously very urgent. There's so much tension behind it. But she's using language that we are hearing in everyday speak now.
Well, she put her money where her mouth is. She put her ass where her mouth is. You know, when she stood up in front of the feminist sign at, where was that?
The VMAs.
Right. In 2014, says here. That's indelible. That's not just saying it in an article.
Yeah.
That's marrying yourself to the word and the movement in an archive that, as you know, because you love to talk about the Beyoncé archive, will be there forever.
Yeah. And to go on in this GQ article to pull out things that resonate now, 5 years later, after, you know, she talks about the control and the money and being independent, she goes on to say, you know, when I was writing the Destiny's Child songs, it was a big thing to be that young and taking control. And the label at the time didn't know that we were going to be that successful, so they gave us all control. And I got used to it.
Hmm.
It is my goal in life to be that example. And I think it will hopefully trickle down and more artists will see that, because it only makes sense. It's only fair. So from there, I'm relating it to what we've seen not only from Beyoncé at Beachella, but throughout Formation, where she has, and we only find out about it later, used her power to uplift other women, other creatives, particularly women of color. We saw people of color primarily featured on that stage. I mean, there were a few white faces on that stage here
or
and there.
Or who present as white, right?
That's
like,
right.
We don't know the...
Exactly. We know that she has worked with young songwriters in, you know, using sample songs and have, like, she's kickstarted their careers. These are young men and women of color. She uses Black female directors for her videos. I am sure that when we hear more names coming out of Beachella and in involved in the production, we will see across the board creatives who are, you know, the beneficiary of this trickle-down example that she's talking about.
And that she's brave enough to engage in, right? Of all the kind of things and thoughts that came out of the performance and that people are still talking about, what was most interesting to me was actually from Beyoncé's own mother. So in all of her discussions about strong women in the book, again, guys, like, I'm not getting a cut of this book, but read it. It's so delicious. She always talks about how her mother taught her to be a strong woman and et cetera. But so her mother, Tina Lawson, wrote something so interesting on her Instagram that I really loved. So she's reacting to a quote. So stay with me. We got to do a quote within a quote here. Alicia Adamson Prophet writes about Beachella. She took us to Wakanda Church, a HBCU classic Battle of the Bands, the ultimate probate step show, and more. She had an orchestra, a full band, a drum line, a choir, and a bazillion dancers. She is the first Black female to headline Coachella, and she killed it. The name has officially been changed to Beachella. That stage will never be the same. It was magical. So no argument there. And this is what her mother wrote. Saw this written above and thought I would share it with you. I told Beyoncé that I was afraid that the predominantly white audience at Coachella would be confused by all the Black culture and Black college culture because it was something they might not get. Her brave response to me made me feel a bit selfish and ashamed. She said, I've worked very hard to get to the point where I have a true voice, and at this point in my life and my career, I have a responsibility to do what's best for the world and not what is most popular. She said her hope is that after the show, young people would research this culture and see how cool it is, and young people, Black and white, would listen to Lift Every Voice and Sing and see how amazing the words are for all of us and bridge the gap. She also hopes it will encourage young kids to enroll in our amazing, historically Black colleges and universities. I stand corrected. Ugh. Ugh. Like, I just want to, we'll break this down and talk about it in lots of ways, and there's lots here, but can we just talk about somebody's mother saying publicly that they were wrong and their kid was right? When do you see that?
Well, we don't have mothers who do that.
No, but my understanding is that Tina Knowles is also not a mother who does do
no.
that. Like, this is a moment. That's uh-huh. She says, like, I was wrong. She says I was schooled by my child. I've read this over and over, and I like it so much. I'm a broken record saying that Beyoncé's family and her parents have been what got her here, and they've been with her every step of the way. But that they could know her power and her strength and still be like, I don't know, this might be too far, this might be too much, it might not work. And she goes, I got to make it work. I have a responsibility to make it work. I am floored by this.
I don't know what else I can say. I am floored by it too. And I think that, like, all of that in watching that performance was what she did. And yet, when you use the words responsibility to show people, typically the sense you get is, oh, but it won't be fun. And somehow it was also fun. More fun than responsible, very responsible, so fun. Like, right? Do you get what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. You're saying that the impression that you get maybe being told what it was you're going to see feels like vegetables.
Medicine doesn't taste good.
Right. But it's not, like, I guess that's the, I hate to say lesson even, right? But that's the thing is, like, here, welcome into this culture of great joy and music that you didn't know about. Here's all the ways I'm going to show it to you. You're so lucky that I'm showing you this awesomeness.
Yeah.
Not I am lecturing you and taking you to school because you should know by now.
Yeah. And yet what you've just said relates to perhaps the most powerful quote in this GQ 13 article, which again was her last real interview. And there are a lot of people who think that this wasn't by design, that, you know, Beyonce maybe was thinking about pulling back from the media then, but it really was cemented after the elevator and blah, 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 right? That is really when she was like, yep, that's it. I'm shutting her down.
I mean, maybe, but let's be clear here. Like, Beyonce was the master of doing an interview without saying a word, even back then.
Even back then, but I will say, here is how this piece ends. And the quote, I think I remember some people laughing at it. Maybe even I laughed at it because I was stupid and an asshole. I don't know. I don't remember. However, looking back now, if this was if this is how her last real interview ended, this is what she said. I now know that, yes, I am powerful. I'm more powerful than my mind can even digest and understand. That's it. That is how the GQ 13, it's pretty famous now because this is also the article that talks about and like allows the writer Amy Wallace into the archive. So we all know Beyonce's building a Beyonce library or has been building a Beyonce library. And so this is in sort of the study of Beyonce, this is one of the seminal pieces, and that is how it ends. And now, 5 years later, okay, well, she knew before we knew.
Yeah, but here's
as usual.
And here's the thing about that. Like, you read that with beautiful power and emphasis and vocal resonance. But tell us the name of the writer again.
Amy Wallace.
Amy Wallace ends the piece that way. Beyonce did not necessarily end the piece that way. You know what I mean? She may have tossed that off in conversation because I think the thing about her is that I believe she believes it. I believe she said it. I'm more powerful than my mind can even understand. But I don't believe that that is how she thinks of herself. What I mean is I don't believe that Beyonce is sitting around contemplating her own power because she's constantly regenerating. I don't know if she's capable of like negative self-talk. I don't know if that's a thing, but you know that she is saying to herself constantly, what next? Do it again. Do something better. Pick it up a notch. Let's go.
Oh, she's saying it right now. I mean, like, I bet you to go back to the boots and the outfit, those are not going to fucking move next Saturday.
I did not have that much of an issue with the boots.
She at one point they fall down and then they're back up. It bothered her enough that at some point again she knew when the camera would be off her because I have tried to find the spot where she pulls them back up. Of course, she pulls them back up when the camera's not on her.
Obviously.
Ugh, obviously. But given the amount that she was futzing with that top is getting some fix.
Oh, yeah. The top is a problem. The thing is, you love to talk about the archive, about the Beyonce archive. And as much as it's all there, I don't think she's rolling back to see what amazing things she has said. In fact, if there's a detraction from Beyonce, it's that she's not a super verbose woman who's like, she's not highly articulate off the cuff. That's not who she is. She is rehearsed. She is practiced. She shows her work. So I never think that she's rolling back looking to see what she said. And was I representing my own brilliance? She's looking back to see what else can I do again? What can I pick up on? What can I be better? Which begs the obvious question. I'm just sitting here shrugging at you in silence. Like,
and I'm shrugging back.
You know, somebody on Twitter asked whether we thought next week's show would be the same. And I would bet your life that it won't be. It's not going to be a whole new show because that's categorically impossible. But there will be some changes. There will be some things that are new to reward the faithful, to allow you to watch and pay attention. And then what? Like, then what? What? Now what?
Well, this actually, I just checked our tweets, and Tony on Twitter tweeted at me a quote from, and the last time we podcasted, when we talked about Britney Spears, we quoted from Doreen St. Felix, writing in The New Yorker. And Doreen has written a really great piece about Beyoncé's Beachella. And here's a quote that Tony sent to us. So I'm quoting Doreen St. Felix right now. Quote, branding this performance Beachella is not merely social media savvy. It's a recognition that excelling at her art requires overpowering the arenas that would have the power to diminish her.
Ooh.
So Tony wrote to us quoting this quote, and she says to me, just like the time she made the Grammys her coronation, right, Lainey Gossip? You called this, and it's so true. So at the Grammys, this is the Adele Grammys. This is 2 years ago. It was Lemonade versus 25. Adele won. And when I wrote about it the next day, I was like, she knew she was not going to win. This is why her performance that night was 10 minutes. Do you remember the chair that went backwards?
I do remember.
And she made herself into a queen using their stage. It was a coronation, a self-coronation. You're not going to give me the crown. I'm just going to give it to myself.
I'm reclaiming my time.
Exactly. And so what Doreen St. Felix is saying here in a much more articulate way is what, and to answer your question, what's next? She went to the Grammys and made herself a queen when they would deny her, and they keep denying her. She went to Coachella, a space that we don't have to talk about. Like, she just made history, but this is a certain space where...
You want me to say strummy la la guitar cool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I guess if it's what's next, what are the other spaces that she can conquer?
I mean, my worry is that if there aren't any, that you would imply that that means that her work is done. But what I love is that she will find them, is that she, you know, this performance feels important to you and I because it marries all of the things that we love, which is to say not just Beyoncé and fierce amounts of shocking amounts of work and devotion and little known cultural artifacts from her culture and from others and university like trivia. And these are things we never thought we were going to see. We never thought we were going to see Beyoncé give a nod to, you know, collegiate. I can't begin to imagine. Somewhere somebody is working up a Beyoncé Pride and Prejudice. That sounds preposterous to us right now, but that will be the thing we didn't know we needed, or I don't know what, or she is the first popular star to like perform on the steps of Buckingham Palace. I have no idea what it's going to look like, but like we are limited by our smaller imaginations.
Yes.
And she does not have the power to be so. And it is, I know if you're like, feeling as though you're listening, like, all this with the Beyoncé and all this with the whatever. I get it. For some people, she is not your thing. She is never going to be your thing. But I think the reason we get so effusive is because she is perhaps one of the only people we look at and admire in that world who is working up to her potential all the time. And by doing so, is always stretching the ceiling of the potential.
With no one else pushing her.
with nobody else. No, she's not doing it for anybody else.
No, it's not for anybody else, but they always say it's harder to get better when there's not someone behind you. She doesn't have a peer.
No, she left them long ago.
That's right. And so if we go back to an athletic analogy, there's nobody else who is running beside her.
No pace setter.
No. So it is harder to set your own pace when nobody else is driving you and you can hear their footsteps. So to be that and to maintain that level of excellence when everything, all the motivation and all the ambition has to be self-generated is harder than anything else.
And yet it goes back to that word that you used, responsibility. If you are this talented, if you are given this much, or even if you were run this hard and taught to work this much that you were able to develop your talent this much, then you have arguably a responsibility to keep bringing it to people or, you know, maybe to make yourself into, she's no longer performing for herself. She's performing for us. I don't know, man. I don't know what it is to be that person inside her brain. That's what's most interesting to me.
I wish.
Yeah, but she doesn't spend her brain. But she's not spending any time thinking about anybody else. She's not thinking about Stephen Hawking. She's not thinking about, I don't know, Nikola Tesla. Like, she's only focused on how she can be better. What do you think Beyonce would say if I closed out the podcast with a brag?
I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I actually don't care what Beyonce would say about it because I've never heard this story before and I've been saving it for myself. So we could go on for another 2 hours about Beyonce, but we are going to end with this anecdote, a story that I have been waiting a long time to hear.
I mean, don't build it up that much. My God. I mean, part of the reason you haven't heard it is because I a little bit forgot and I told Kathleen the story in passing and she said, why is that not your Twitter bio? The story goes like this. Years ago when I was working at eTalk, we had the opportunity to have several musicians interviewed on our behalf. Now, I say that it was not that we would interview them. I got to interview lots of amazing people, but this was not that. They were all going to be, I don't know, say at the Sony offices one day. And we were going to get a certain amount of time, but an employee of the record company was going to ask the questions that we wrote.
Okay.
And they were all, I was covering fashion and style at the time. So I wrote all fashion and style questions. And I can't believe I've never told the story, but I made Beyonce laugh more than once. My questions made Beyonce laugh.
Okay. Back up the truck.
Okay.
Okay. So you submit these questions.
Yeah. I think there were questions for Mandy Moore, I know for sure. Maybe Hilary Duff. I feel like there was somebody else and Beyonce. The fact that I even said those names in a group, but the questions were somewhat tailored for each artist.
Okay. So this is a podcast about work.
Right.
So tell me what was the work that went into your questions for Beyonce?
Well, I'm so glad that you asked because I have very few material regrets in my life, like literally regrets about objects, but I regret giving away my copy of Destiny's Style written by then Tina Knowles, her mother. I literally bought myself another copy today on Amazon because it was this really kind of surprisingly candid coffee table book about Beyonce and Kelly and Michelle and the ways that Tina dressed them differently and having to hide Beyonce's waist and, you know, that kind of thing. And so I definitely read that book cover to cover several times. And again, remember this was, I think it was 2003 or four, Crazy in Love had happened, but like so had Goldmember. Beyonce, to your point, was not then who Beyonce would become.
Yes. Okay, so how many questions were there?
I think there were six.
And they were taken, like, inspired by Destiny's style?
Many.
Okay. Do you remember the questions?
What I remember that... I don't remember all of the questions. I wish I could, though I can see them on the page. You know when you can see the printed page?
Okay.
And I can see the page where my Beyonce questions began and ended and where another artist began.
Were you intending to make her laugh?
I was intending to be funny generally.
Yeah.
But I wanted the questions to be what you learn really quickly when you're doing celebrity interviews, as you know, is that you can tell when they've been asked the questions before.
Yes.
So my goal is to write questions, especially because I'm not going to be there and can't deliver them. My goal is to write questions that they haven't been asked before.
Okay. So which ones made her laugh?
God, I want the phrasing. I remember it must have been a question about fashion mistakes or something. And she was giggling, trying to get through the question and explaining that what you need is a mother who will tell you when you look ridiculous. And my mom has no problem, she said.
Right.
And was giggling at the beginning and the end.
And you're watching this.
Not live.
Yes.
I got the tapes back in 2003 fashion.
Yeah.
FedEx probably 2 days later.
Yes.
And I'm watching this.
Okay. So when she's laughing,
you're
watching Beyonce laugh at something essentially that you've said.
Something I wrote. Yeah.
And how are you feeling?
Oh, I felt delighted, especially because without naming any names, there were some people who didn't maybe get the questions and they were delivered the same way by the record rep. Thank you, record rep. Each time. So I know it was in the receiver, not the asker. And she was also laughing at, what else was she laughing at? She was laughing at like the idea of, I think it was the idea of like left to her own devices. Could she put anything together? And she was kind of making fun of herself. You know, I could find that tape today somewhere.
I'm going into the library tomorrow.
If I could find a machine to play it on. And go back and kind of live that moment again. But yeah, in retrospect, I have that to carry with me. I made Beyonce laugh.
I'm jealous. Like there are a few things that you have done that I'm jealous of, and that has just like sprung to the top.
Yeah, I'll take that.
And Kathleen's right. That is should be your Twitter bio and like every introduction you make of yourself and anytime you are going to see for a job. I am Duana Taha, and I made Beyonce laugh.
I'm going to adjust.
You're hired.
You're right. How could anybody say no? I'm going to adjust my Twitter bio for the show notes tomorrow so that you can all see that it happened. And if you want to get that tape, you know, online for my birthday, I'll take that too.
I'm going to find it. I'm going to go into the library tomorrow. Again, we could be here for another 2 hours.
Let us know what we missed. Let us know what you loved. All the things that we can talk about on separate occasions and all the ways that you felt like your Destiny's Child joy was being brought back. We want to know all of it.
We want to know your favorite Beyonce memories, your favorite moments, and your takeaways from Beachella. Beyonce will make an appearance on Show Your Work again. Don't worry, I'm sure. Whenever she's ready.
And if you are the unicorn who listens to Show Your Work and was there, speak the fuck up. We would love to hear your stories, every single word. Please, God, tell us.
Until next time, be inspired by Beyonce. We may not be able to match her, but we can keep working just as hard. Leave us your comments on Google Play, Spotify, iTunes. We'll be back next week. Middle fingers up.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.